the two most materially poor continents on the globe. I'm speaking from my heart when I tell you, in the name of God, whatever you can do before you enter eternity, of course I also include myself, whatever we can do before we enter eternity, to, I repeat the verb, wean ourselves, become detached from the things of this world, the more assured is our eternal salvation, and strange, the happier we will be . The only truly happy people are those who are looking forward to heaven, to giving them the satisfaction and the happiness they want. What does the gospel of life include? It includes, quoting the Holy Father, everything that human experience and reason tell us about the value of human life, accepting it, purifying it, exalting it, and bringing it to fulfillment. And that first verb is crucial, accepting it. As Christians, we don't believe in reincarnation. This is it. Thus, our faith in Jesus Christ gives meaning to human life beyond anything that the human mind, without divine revelation, could ever conceive. In other words, we are to have a foretaste here on earth. We are to have a foretaste here on earth of the joys that God has in store for us after bodily death. Otherwise, what will happen? It will just join the other casualties in our society who want more of whatever you call more money, more food, more leisure, less work, less pain. And of course, they can spend their lives in a mad search, or will not satisfy them. It is only faith in Jesus Christ and faith, hear it, that if I'm doing His will now, no matter what the price may be, I am assured of heaven. Let me ask you to read questions and answers 63, 64. Let's take 65. Where in the Old Testament is the dignity of human life more fully revealed? That's Old Testament. The dignity of human life is more fully revealed, especially in three books of the Old Testament, the book of Job, Ecclesiastes, and the book of Wisdom. Thus we are told about the Creator that, quotes, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity into man's mind. My friends, it's eternity. It is eternity that makes our lives here on earth precious. And no matter how much we have to suffer, what trial the Lord may send us, we should be happy. And not want either to shorten our lives or the life of another person. Because the time we spend here is very, and I can speak now from experience, very short. I mean the sentence that I'm going to share with you. I but long ago, have lost my mind. I did not believe in eternity. And the more faithful we want to be to God, the more closely we want to follow Christ. Hear it. From years of experience, the more you have to carry the cross. But whoever said that carrying the cross should make us sad? Dear Lord, that's heresy. Carrying the cross should make us happy. Because we know with the infallible assurance of our faith that from the sliver that our cross may be to the heavy burden that we cannot carry by ourselves and we need constant help from God. Now that cross promises us such happiness through all eternity as we could never in our wildest dreams conceive. Over 40 years of teaching comparative religion, Hinduism, Buddhism, you name it, I've told my students, most of whom, especially at the State University, were not either Catholic or even Christian, for me, one of the strongest marks of the truth of both Christianity and the Catholic faith is that Catholic Christianity gives human beings sound, rational grounds for suffering. There's a purpose, there's a meaning, there's a goal. What is the key word for understanding the dignity of human life? Now, of course, in raising these questions and giving you answers, I am drawing on the Holy Father's encyclical. But throughout these questions and answers, I, of course, have to also draw on such knowledge of Catholic theology as I know. The word eternity is a key word. Human life is ultimately sacred because it is eternal. And all that we've said about eternity applies here. I could talk, I'm not exaggerating, not for hours, but for years. About eternity. Because that's all our life here on earth is about. It's about eternity. That our lives do not end when our body dies. And secondly, that our lives here on earth are a means for ensuring, first of all, that we shall be happy in eternity, and indeed more happy. And the more patiently and faithfully we carry the cross here on earth, the the more happy we will be for all eternity. 67. We have in Revelation the meaning of human life most fully revealed. A simple declarative sentence. It is most fully revealed in the life and teaching of Jesus Christ. And that is why I keep telling people there will be no pro-life movement in the world except for the Catholic Church. There will be no conversion of the murderers in high places in our society except for the teaching of the Catholic Church, which condemns these murderers. And Christ is the one who no one before and no one since Christ more clearly or deeply reveals the meaning and value of human life than he. How does he and heareth? You may say, Father, I wish you did not bring that business of poverty up so often. I'm sorry. But Christ reveals the real dignity of human life by a selective concern and love for the poor. The poor in material possessions, the sick, the outcasts, those oppressed by the devil. And by the way, more people are oppressed by the devil than most people realize. I can now speak for the rest of this term on what, from experience, I know the devil does in human lives. In general, Christ's greatest concern was for those who are somehow suffering. All of this was meant to show that the true meaning of human life does not come from the pleasures and possessions of this world. It finally derives from the riches and joys of eternity. I have spoken by now for hours for men who are dying of AIDS. The most unusual day of recollection I have ever given in my life was the day of recollection in Washington that I gave to the Missionaries of Charity, and they were about to open their home for the victims of AIDS. And I hope you believe me. I've met men who came there in despair, including the multimillionaire with nothing left except the prospect of death awaiting him. And what I may do, I'll have to find it. If I can find it by our next class, at the 29th of October, 2 weeks from today, I would like to read you, if I can find the letter, from the multimillionaire who was dying of AIDS in despair, she well might have been when he came, the beautiful death that he died, and the months before his death. they considered it a mission from our Lord. Once he was converted to see that there's a life after death that is awaiting him. Spent hours teaching, inspiring, consoling his fellow victims. I mean this. Every time that I visited that place in Washington, I would first find him in chapel praying. Oh, what he taught me, believe me, is not just a commentary on Evangelium Vitae by Pope John Paul II. This is sharing with you the most important need we have on earth. The need to see heaven and eternity as our destiny and not life on earth as a purpose of our existence. I sure hope I'm clear. And this man strengthened my faith immeasurably. Talk about the miracle of grace. And what does God do? He sends us trials. We call them trials. Tribulations, the longer word. Sorrows. Problems. Disappointments. The dictionary is filled with these negative descriptions of what we don't like in this life, otherwise known as pain. What is God's purpose? God's purpose, and I repeat the verb again, I could use some water or something. This is God's divinely ordained purpose. What a difference makes all the difference in the world. I'm sure that one reason why the Lord is keeping me on earth is to keep telling people, in the name of the God you believe in, don't look for the full satisfaction that your heart desires here on earth. Expect trials. I mean, even look forward to trials. Welcome them. Embrace them. Believe me, I'm not quoting from psychologists. I'm quoting from all the saints who have written, and so extensively, on the sweetness of the cross. Now question 69. What is the basic irony in the life of Christ? in one of the mysterious contrast between his exalted dignity and his rejection by his own people. One irony. Remember, an irony is an apparent contradiction. It's not real. His people, the chosen people of the old law, for centuries, have been taught by the prophets about the coming Messiah. All they had to do is read 5 verses of Isaiah, which told them the Messiah would be, well, the suffering servant. When he came, what did they expect? Somebody would lead them, liberate them from, say, the yoke of the Roman Empire. Liberate them from the tribute they had to pay to Caesar. Free them from the oppression under which they labored. And when the real Messiah came, and I have to use this word, they thought he was a fake. I've counseled too many souls, Christians, Catholics by name. Oh, they could give you all kinds of glib answers to the most subtle theological questions. But for so many, they never really knew Christ crucified. It was again the contradiction between his infinite riches as God and his supreme poverty, even his not having a place to lay his head. I can tell you there's quite a difference between speaking in America and speaking in another country.